A lot goes into taking care of your property. You need equipment with more reliability and versatility built in, like Kubota BX and L Series compact tractors, rated number one in durability and owner experience. Z Series mowers that deliver a quality cut, and Sidekick utility vehicles where durability meets speed. Visit your local Kubota dealer for a demo today.
Green & Sons Farm and Lawn Equipment. On the web at greenandsons.com.
How the f*** have you not seen that?
Hello, and welcome back to the long-awaited latest episode of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? My name is Emma. I'm here to host you today with some of the rest of the fan critical crew. We have Len. Say hello, Len.
Do I have to say hello? Yeah, okay, I will.
Okay,
hello.
Okay, you have to say hello.
How are you doing?
And Lucy.
Yeah, ordered.
Hello.
So if you have not tuned in to How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That or Hutta for Hunster before, the premise is very simple. We dig into our closets of shame and reveal the films that we should have seen, definitely have pretended to have seen, but haven't. Make that person watch that film and then talk about it for 45 minutes with some humour.
And you would think that there can't be that many of them because it's actually ridiculous.
But there are.
But there actually is. So
we've been doing this.
Yeah. We've been doing this since
all
of lockdown.
We've been doing this for a year now.
Yeah, and
Jesus,
I will say that the other day I was in the process of redesigning our website. You can go see that at www.fancritical.com. Go check it out. It looks very swanky, if I do say so myself. But I was in the process of listing all of our episodes on there, and it took me ages because there's so many. Like, so yeah, check those episodes out. There's some crazy ones in there. This one's pretty crazy. It's a slog, but it's pretty crazy.
Oh, I have to say, I have a surprise for you all in that looking up the Rotten Tomatoes reviews on this, I suddenly spotted a film that I've definitely never seen definitely should have done. So wait for the end for that. But
add it to the list.
It is time, without further ado, I shall reveal the film today that has not been seen. It is the 1979 marathon Francis Ford Coppola film Apocalypse Now. And Lucy, how the fuck have you not seen that?
How the fuck have you not seen that?
I know.
I mean, considering Rotten Tomatoes, 98% fresh.
Wow, so, that is high.
Solid. That is insane. And actually, what I've written in my notes here, the terrible prep, is 895% audience score.
What?
So it's 94%.
Right.
Yeah, I mistyped there.
Bizarre.
But I'll read you a summary before we actually get into the shame of Lucy. So yeah. For those of you who've not seen Apocalypse Now, it is described as thus. In Vietnam in 1970, Captain Willard, played by Martin Sheen, takes a perilous and increasingly hallucinatory journey upriver to find and terminate Colonel Kurtz, played by Marlon Brando, we'll talk about that later, a once promising officer who has reportedly gone completely mad. In the company of a Navy patrol boat filled with street-smart kids, a surfing-obsessed air cavalry officer, Robert Duvall, and a crazed freelance photographer, Dennis Hopper, Willard travels further and further into the heart of darkness. I mean, listen to that summary. Have you not seen this, Lucy? What's the crack?
I don't know. I always never know why I haven't seen films. But what I will say is that I have started this film before.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And it's just not a film that I've sought out. I've known that it's obviously supposed to be very good. It's been on TV and I'm like, oh, Apocalypse Now, I'll start that. But it's on at like 10:30 and then I just have never finished it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because I always used to think that I loved like the Vietnam War films. I actually haven't seen that many of them. So I think probably what I like is like Platoon and the bit in Forrest Gump where he goes to Vietnam. Like there's not actually that many of them that I've seen.
Have you seen We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson?
No, that sounds shit. I've never even heard of that, so... Don't add that to the list. No.
No.
But I did actually...
Have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
No.
Okay, well, we're not doing those
that
again.
That can be
we're staying away
list,
from the Vietnam War for a little while, but let's just
for
say...
A bit, yeah.
Keep those on the back
burner.
Let
it breathe.
Yeah, let it breathe.
I have actually... At uni, we had to read Heart of Darkness, which is the novella that this was based on.
Good old Joseph Conrad.
Yeah. That book is interesting in its own right.
Mm.
But Yeah, I don't know why I haven't really seen it. And I think it's just something, because it is quite long and obviously comes attached with a reputation, I've never sought it out to
bit
watch.
Bit like Braveheart.
Oh, yeah, well, I've just never had any.
You just hate Mel Gibson. But that's all I'm getting from this. You haven't seen We Were Soldiers. You haven't seen Braveheart. You probably haven't seen...
I like Mel Gibson in The Simpsons. He's pretty good in that. But yeah, not like...
Or in South Park, he's hilarious. So.
And I like the film Signs as well.
Oh, good
This
film.
Is not about Mel Gibson, good for film. Once. For no. once, this is a
it's
podcast.
It's not about Mel Gibson.
Not about Mel Gibson. Mm-hmm. It's about Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we hear your experience of then watching it and your thoughts, Lucy, I'm going to move to Len. Mm. Len, tell us about your experience of Apocalypse Now, your thoughts about the film and any Blueberry score.
So I remember watching this film just when I was studying TV and film, which is what I work in. And I remember I've been studying it since I was quite young, I'd say like, I don't know, 13, 14. I always knew it was something I wanted to do. So I chose courses that, you know, had that sort of element to them. And I remember towards the end of high school, I guess would be the equivalent way of describing it for Australian and American listeners, I watched this film and wrote some words on it. And I have not watched it since that time. So my memory of it is, you know, completely shot until today when I watched it again. And I remember thinking at the time, this is really impressive, but I was probably just looking at it from a sort of very analytical student kind of way. It is a great film. Let's not beat around the bush. Like, some of the stuff in this film is amazing. Some of the acting, the general descent into madness is very off-putting and, like, I don't know, it's just makes me feel all hazy when I watch this film. Like, my mind goes sort of with it. The lighting is incredible. Like, and the general sort of scenes and sort of just visuals that this film has, still to this day, compared to any other sort of war film that I can think of, have just such iconic imagery implanted into my brain, like the flare, the color from the flares, the way that the ceiling fan is lit and the half light on, you know, people's faces, especially Colonel Kurtz or Kuntz or whatever he's called at the end.
Kurtz.
Yeah, Colonel Kurtz. Colonel Kurtz.
This isn't Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. So there's loads of things to really like about this film from an analytical point of view. However, I've talked about this many times when we do these podcasts, because sometimes it's lovely sitting down on a Sunday and watching a film. And we did Trainspotting last time and I hadn't seen that. And it was not an enjoyable time for me. It just wasn't. I was really hungover. I'd had my tuna sandwich, which everyone thinks is mental to have that on a hangover.
Again, wrong.
But that's my hangover food, yeah? Today, I was extremely shattered because I knew it was going to be a slog. It's the version I watched was Redux, so it's 2 hours 36, I think. So I'd been putting off watching it again because I was like, oh, I'll have time to do it. But then, you know, England are playing in the soccer Euros at the moment. Football to us English
soccer.
People. Yeah, well,
the soccer Euros.
I have to say soccer because A, American listeners, B, living in Australia, they have a different term for football. So, like the Americans do. But so to do that, to watch that, I had to get really early. And then I had to play soccer/football today. So I was knackered when I watched this. And it proved to be a very big slog. However, I really did enjoy it. But my memory of it is kind of just glossed over by the way that I used to like even when I talked about analyzing this film and just some of the things that are incredible. You know, my partner came in and watched a bit of it, just sat down on the couch, so what is going on? And this was the bit with like the monologues with Colonel Kurtz towards the end. He's fucking batshit crazy and the dialogue's all over the place. It is absolutely bonkers. Yeah.
Most of that is unscripted as well, because Marlon Brando, mental. I'll come to that when I talk to you about
it. It's absolutely insane. The last 40 minutes feel like a blur. I don't know if I was asleep or like half asleep watching this on my couch. I'm going to give the film a 5 because I think technically it's incredible. I you know, compared to other Vietnam films that I've seen, like Lucy, you mentioned Platoon. I mean, that film's trash compared to this. Just in terms of just everything about it, like, I get this film is meant to be surreal, but the imagery, the acting, and just the vision in this film is so much more powerful. It's a 5. It is probably the best film centered around the Vietnam War that I can think of. It reminds me a lot of Kubrick in the way that it is, you know, feels bit like the music, the synth. But also bringing in those, you know, tracks from the 70s, which are very iconic.
That's a good shout.
Ride of the Valkyries. The Doors. Yeah, I mean, but it's that idea, if you'd actually listen to the soundtrack, it feels very post-apocalyptic. And I know it's called Apocalypse Now, but it feels Blade Runner-y. It feels like this is a different world and a bit alien. And for me, that's why it gets a 5. You know, did I enjoy my time watching it today? Sort of. Would I recommend to anyone watching it a third time? Definitely not. Once again, it's one of those films that you kind of watch, maybe come back to once every 10 years, but really appreciate for it for what it is and what it achieved at the time. You know, 1979, that's crazy to me. You know, it's based on events that happened, you know, 8 years prior, essentially. So it's fascinating how close in proximity it is to that event and also how visually stunning it is for that time that it was made. So 5 from me, and that's my review. Thanks.
Thanks, Len. I'll go next because obviously we'll save the reveal and the best for last with Lucy. My experience actually, Len, is similar to yours. So I not TV and film, but English I studied at university. Predominantly linguistics, but I did do a certain amount of literature as well. And I'm one of those people, as I'm sure you'll all know from listening to the podcast, if I read a book, I like to see the film adaptation of it afterwards. So Lucy, like you, I studied Heart of Darkness, I think actually at college, so before university, so not to confuse the Americans, when I was about
end
17.
Of high school, end of high school, I think that is.
Yeah, end of high school. And I think that's when I studied Heart of Darkness and I watched this film. And I was amazed by it because I don't think I'd ever seen anything like it. Mm. And I really like the Joseph Conrad novella. I think it's very interesting. But the thing I also really like about Apocalypse Now is the story around the film. So, you know, all of the things that happened during filming. I mean, it took 16 months, I think, to film in the end. Marlon Brando essentially was a massive dickhead the whole way through filming. Like, he originally took like a $1 million advance for it and then refused to film it, hated the script, turned up like 40 kilos overweight, refused to like do anything that they wanted him to do, and was a bit of a nightmare. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's sad because, you know, Marlon Brando, isn't it? You know, it's just a shame. Martin Sheen had a heart attack in the middle of filming. Like,
I'm not surprised.
No, yeah. I'm not. But there is something about it that I think I have fond memories of. But Len, a bit like you, I think I rewatched it and went, what the I don't remember any of this happening. Yeah. But I also watched the final cut, which is 3 hours and 17 minutes long.
Yeah, waste of time, that.
Slightly... Yeah, well, I didn't think about it, did I? So I went whole hog.
That, to me, Emma, is like when people say, and I was always one of these people that thought watching like the Lord of the Rings extended versions would make them, you know, would be like, yeah, I'm a true fan because I've read the books and whatever. You watch the extended versions, like, it makes you appreciate how difficult the editing process is because some stuff in there is absolutely terrible. And makes the film look cheesy, tacky. Some stuff just doesn't translate very well to the screen. And it makes you appreciate how good editing is and how important it is. And I'm not just saying that because it's my profession, but I'm saying it because it is a skill.
It's and shameless self-promotion.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. If you want to hire me, then do. No, joking. I'm fully booked, so don't
he's
worry
not joking,
about it.
He's desperate for work. But I think the final cut of Apocalypse Now is interesting. So the first time you see it, I don't think you should watch the final cut because there is some weird mental shit in there that just doesn't need to be in there. There's a lot of Marlon Brando talking crap. Some weird French soldiers at one point. That's very odd. It's a whole like 20 minutes of them finding them in this like palatial house in the mountains of Vietnam.
The French were there first.
7 3-course dinners.
The French were there first, Emma.
Just, that's. I mean, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the film.
It's not fine.
In the context of the film, very
None
strange.
Of it's fine.
However, I think going back and watching it a second time, probably a third or fourth time actually that I've watched this, knowing the background and, you know, all of the drama and the stress of filming this and all of the things that had happened kind of in and around production, I think it's really interesting to watch the final cut. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it to an extent, although I did feel a little bit like someone had like dropped a tab of acid in my coffee.
Yeah.
Everything was a bit mental. But you're right. I mean, Len, the thing that's amazing about this film is the cinematography. It's stunningly put together and it makes you feel like Friday night, I'm really cool, Friday night, blinds drawn, low lighting, Apocalypse Now on the telly. It was quite an experience. Having said that, I don't think it holds up for me personally over time. I remember it being an incredible movie. I don't think I ever would have given it 5 blue. But actually...
It's a 5 blue.
I think...
But yeah, go on.
This is a democracy.
Sorry,
not a Lentatorship.
Lentatorship.
And so I've been back and forth since last night trying to think about what I would give this. And actually, I think it probably just pips itself to a 4 blue film now because... Not because of the French accordion player. That, for me, not great. But because of the place it holds in cinema history,
yeah.
I suppose.
It did win an Oscar for cinematography, Emma. Did win an Oscar for cinematography. So,
I know. So, yeah, I 4 bloobs. 4 bloobs for that. I think if it wasn't for... some of the amazing stuff in it and, you know, the performances and the fact that I'm quite fond of it anyway, it might have dropped down to a 3, but I'm going to give it a 4 blue.
What?
I'm going to give it a 4 blue.
I wonder if you'd watch just the sort of cinematic
2-hour 30
version, how your view would have changed.
Probably would have enjoyed it more.
Yeah, you definitely would.
Long slog. Okay, Lucy, it is now your turn to tell us how you now feel, having finally watched the
cinematic?
I can't think of the word. Cinematic masterpiece that is Apocalypse Now.
Well, I don't think it would ever come near 3 blueberry because
there you go.
I think that's
mad. Insane. That's more insane than
it.
Colonel Kurtz, okay? So
yeah,
don't go saying
jungle.
That shit.
I actually watched this a little while ago because we had to reschedule. So it's not like fully fresh in my mind, but taking myself back to when I was watching it, have to say I was just completely transfixed by it. And I was thinking throughout, like, why haven't you watched this before? Some of the stuff that they filmed, like Len said, when it was filmed, I genuinely was thinking, how have they done that? Like the helicopters all in sync. Some of the napalming, like just the special effects. Like, I'm not surprised it was an absolute nightmare to film. They're just the visuals, what you're seeing on screen for the time. And none of this is set. None of this is just built on a soundboard. This is like in the jungle. There's a temple. The bridges with all the lights, everything. The fucking Playboy bunny bit. Just the visuals. I was like, this is insane. The music, like Len said. I genuinely was watching it and I think like this is a pinnacle of filmmaking. Really, I was just blown away by it. Really blown away by it. And I was annoyed that I hadn't seen it before because it's very much my kind of film. I don't mind a slow film because it was really building to where it was going. I just thought it was fantastic. I don't think it's perfect.
It's still too long.
I don't think it's too long, and that is someone that feels that most films should be 90 minutes. I think Kurtz's character is quite built up, and then when you actually, I think Marlon Brando does a fantastic job. But a lot of it is the COD philosophy. I'm like, I'm not getting much of a vibe of why he's so influential and why he's worshipped as a demigod. Maybe you get more in one of the other versions. But on the way up, when you're reading his papers, yes. But once you're there and the stuff he's saying about like humanity and civilization, like this just sounds very much like
the ramblings that you of a madman
on the Kingsland Road, yeah. Just like trying to impress you, talking about Nietzsche or whatever.
End of the night, you know, you've had a kebab, you're on a bit of a come down or something, and some guy's just
someone's
fucking
trying to be philosophical. So I don't think it's perfect. But I mean, it's just entered the cultural canon, hasn't it? I mean, I watched an episode of Hey Dougie, which is a kids show. Listeners out there with kids or people,
I love Hey Dougie.
Going to have kids. Very good show. But they did an Apocalypse Now one. They got their river badge and they went up the river. Right. And Dougie comes out of the water all green. And then it's a big panda who's in the temple.
That's great for parents.
I get this now.
That's great for parents. These little references. It's designed. It's obviously not designed for the children, hopefully.
But it's just so iconic. And then watching it and seeing how much more there was and all the people popping up, was like, Harrison Ford. It's a young Harrison Ford.
That blew my mind, Lucy.
But you know what? He's not even young. He's 37 in that film.
What?
Yeah. It was 1979.
What's he doing?
I mean, he is old now. And Lawrence Fishburne. I was like, is that Lawrence Fishburne? Because it looks like him, but he looks like he's about 12.
Do you know what? I did not realise that was Lawrence Fishburne until I was doing some research today. You know, he lied about his age. He was 14 when he filmed that.
Wow.
How mental is that?
He looked extremely young to me. Dennis Hopper's character, again, I felt like, take him out, the film loses nothing. I didn't think he was.
He was
like,
mad.
He didn't add much.
Yeah, but he was another sort of American who was indoctrinated, you know, and that's what was quite interesting, because they talk about Colby, and we'll get into it, obviously. They talk about Colby being indoctrinated. He doesn't really say anything. But you know, Hopper's character is completely indoctrinated. He's just a civilian guy who's like now worships Kurtz. So it gives a bit of context. It gives a voice to a disciple of his, in a way.
Luce, what's your blueberries? And then we can start talking about some of our favourite scenes and characters, I think, or notable performances, because actually we'll dive into that and then have to come back to your bloobs and, you know, structure.
Two blueberries. No, five, definitely.
Five.
If any film deserves five, then I think it's this. I really was very, very entranced and impressed by it, I have to say.
Lovely.
Amazing.
Great work, Luce.
Well, okay, Lucy, a couple of your favourite scenes. Pick one and we'll loop around in a nice little circle.
Okay.
Favourite scenes from the film.
One that really had an impact on me was when they get to like the bridge crossing. I can't remember any of the names. But they're going up the river. Mm-hmm. There's the bridge. It looks like something
the last
like
crossing.
Some terrible version of like, you know, like Disneyland Pirates of the Caribbean, when everything looks not quite real. And just no one knows who's in command. Like, are you in command? There's just this unseen enemy shooting at them. And you think, these are the gates to hell. We are on our way. This is... And you can imagine that in war, where like, who's in command? We don't know. Yeah. We're just here. And like Len said, like, what planet are we on at this point? Like,
yeah, it feels purgatory.
It's surreal.
The rules of war have just gone. And it's just, you're just, like you said, Len, purgatory just then. You're just stuck here. And then the dog, I was like, if anything happens to that dog, I'm going to kill everyone here and then myself, because I would die for that little dog.
That scene when they pull up to that bridge and there's like the fairy lights. And I love a good fairy light, you know.
Me too.
But there's all these other flares going off, and just the visual of that. And then these soldiers just swimming to the boat going, take me with you. I want to go home. And then they're in the trenches and everyone's just completely off their face. Like just shooting into the darkness and shouting at each other, and you see just these explosions.
It's like this kind of
Someone's shouting something. What are they saying? Like, die Americans. I can't remember what it is, but there's just like a voice shouting.
It's a Viet Cong soldier who's trapped on some barbed wire, and he's shouting, like, you know, you American pigs and stuff like that. And then yeah, Roach something. Goes over and uses a thumper grenade launcher and just blows him up. I mean, it's a bizarre scene. And it's just the cinematography there with the fairy lights. It's just genius.
It's amazing.
I mean, yeah. You know, God
it's
knows.
It's like a kind of surreal juxtaposition of like party kind of firework feel crossed with the fear of war, isn't it? And that juxtaposition is so, so surreal.
Yeah.
Because you look at it and you think that could be a bridge in London on New Year's.
Or
when
like,
you look at it from a distance.
Know, a beach party Thailand, like that kind of thing. And then when you get there, it's like, oh, God.
It's hell. It's hell. But it's hell on earth. Purgatory is a great description. And it's an amazing scene.
That's the way they dress the whole film, though. It's this idea of there was a very fine line between partying and killing and also just war in general. Like, I did study a bit of the Vietnam War. I'm not an expert in it or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination. But you get the sense that there were these pockets of, you know, little party hubs, you know, where there wasn't much conflict. Then there was conflict and it all just descends into chaos. And there's also, you know, stories of people who go through the Vietnam War seeing not much conflict at all. So it's this very weird juxtaposition. However, they travel up the river towards Cambodia, obviously they're going into enemy territory. There's obviously more chance of conflict. The soldiers there have seen more things and had to experience horrible things and done things that they don't want to do. You know, a lot of these people didn't want to be there. It's conscription. Mm. It was punishable very seriously in America if they weren't there. So that's why you get characters like Clean, who is, you know, very young. And one of my favorite scenes, which is a horrible scene, is when he gets shot and he's playing the tape from his mum.
Yeah.
And there's something about that scene which I find very powerful and very sad, obviously. She's like talking to him. He's a young boy. Like you said, he was 14 when they filmed this or something. And you get the sense that he was conscripted in the film. He's obviously been conscripted. But he might even
be... I think he says he's 17.
17, yeah. He's, you know, he's so young and, you know... and that moment where he's just dead lying there, and the tape's still playing, like, I can't wait for for me to have grandchildren and I can talk to your wife.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
I'm just like, Jesus, man, this is getting heavy, because the moment that he gets the crew together that he's going on this secret mission with, they're all so green and they've never really seen conflict and they all go insane in their own ways.
And I think that's one of the fascinating things about the film is the psychological impact of war on different people and how, you know, and especially you talk about conscription, you know, that you were forced, you had to go to war. That was it. You had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you were 17 or 27 or 37, you know, if you were conscripted to go, that was it. Off you go to wherever. That particular scene is so awful because it's almost you start to see the full breakdown of everybody else there as well. Like everybody just starts to go because of the way that we feel as an audience watching this poor young kid with his whole life ahead of him. It's tragic.
I do find it weird that the only thing I'd say about the film is I do find it weird that they give him this special mission, obviously classified top mission. You know, we need to go kill Colonel Kurt. This is a serious mission. This guy's got like an army of followers.
Yeah.
You have to travel all the way to Cambodia. We're going to give you these brand new recruits who have no experience, other than Chief, who have no experience in this situation, you know? So that to me is the only part where I'm like, why? That doesn't seem right. They would have like a special forces situation going on, you know? But
I guess it's a lot less, it's a lot easier to cover up if everyone's just sort of unknown. If you've got special ops, then maybe more people have to know about it. I don't know. Don't know anything about the army. So.
Yeah, fair enough. It sounded like like you didn't really know what you were talking about there. I was like, yeah. Wait a minute.
In the Redux version, do you see the funeral that they give?
No.
For him?
Oh, well, we see Chief, when Chief gets speared in the Redux version, he gets laid to rest in the river.
Yeah, in the
because
river.
Which is quite symbolic for him.
So Yeah, I mean that is so in the Final Cut version. This is one of the reasons just YouTube this scene when they end up finding the kind of camp of slightly insane French people, partly soldiers, partly wives and children. It's very odd. Obviously, the history of that makes a lot of sense. They give Clean a funeral and a proper military funeral, and there is this bit where they've lowered him into the ground. And Captain's folding this like burnt, raggedy flag as you fold them for a soldier and hands it to Willard. And that was just, it was so poignant, I think. And that is a part of it that I suppose you'd have had to have kept in the rest of the scenes, which is like another 15 minutes of trash. But that, I think that scene was really important, that they actually made the effort, every single one of them, including all the French soldiers, to give him a proper send-off.
Yeah.
What, send-off, a burial, a goodbye, and respect his service. That poor kid. Yeah, and actually, you know, if you hadn't have had to have all the background of the rest of it, which was tedious to watch, and just like, I felt a bit like I was having a bit of a breakdown watching it, actually. It was a bit mental. But that was really poignant. And again, you know, that when they say goodbye to what's-his-face and they send him off in the river. What's-his-face, sorry.
Chief. It's,
bit slow this morning, Chief. That is equally poignant. I think it's important that you see that part of it when the rest of it is all a bit sort of psychedelic mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those bits kind of show the human cost of war. And the film's not really about that with regards to the war. It's about the personal demons and the dissent and what it can do to people. But it is good to show the soldiers died, many of them very young. For what? Like, why were they there?
And they didn't want to be there. Then they saw, you know, and a lot of them, you get the sense in the film that they're kind of indoctrinated to act a certain way by their commanding officers, especially, with Kurtz. But then there's also other leadership figures throughout the story, like the Rider of the Valkyries guy. They're just being coerced.
Yeah,
they've been coerced.
That's a great scene as well.
Yeah, they've been coerced into this sort of behaviour that they didn't even want to be there to do, which essentially sends them mad because, like Kurtz says, and Kurtz says a lot of bollocks, but he's like, he tells the story of the inoculated children when he went to inoculate kids with polio and how the Viet Cong soldiers found that they had, you know, vaccinated these children and then chopped off the arms where they were vaccinated and left a pile of arms on the floor. And he said in that moment, he understood that they are stronger than him because they can do those things, but they are still human beings. And that sort of is crazy to me. But I understand his point. That sounds mad. That makes me sound insane. But it's to do with the fact that, you know...
No, I know.
I get what you mean, though.
But with regard to the Viet Cong, that is quite specific because they knew the terrain. They knew, how to exploit it to their benefits, whereas the Americans were completely just not prepared. Adrift. And they would do what the Americans wouldn't. And that's how they won. This is the only war that America lost, they say.
And that's what sends Kurtz mad.
That's
what sends him, to the point of insanity, because he questions himself as a soldier and then realizes he has to try and be this other character. Anyway, that whole last 45 minutes of ramblings by Marlon Brando, Jesus, man, I got lost. Apart from that story,
there's more than 45 minutes in the final cut, and I can tell you,
I think in the cinematic one, it's like, he's on screen for about 20 minutes.
Yeah. I will say, you say he turned up overweight. I think that really helped his character in this film. He seemed imposing to me. He seemed really imposing. And I was like, oh God, this guy.
But I have this weird memory of him being I texted Lucy this last night, some really massive Jabba the Hutt type. He wasn't. Not. He just looked hench. He just looked really thick and hench and imposing.
There's a couple of moments where you first meet Kurtz, right? And this is another scene that I really enjoyed. It reminded me of Blade Runner with the lighting he's sort of half in shadow, half in light. And then at the same time, yeah. he's like washing his bald head with yeah. this water, and he's got his head down. And something about that whole scene, which is obviously bizarre, is beautiful. And it's just the cinematography. And he there's a couple more scenes where he talks and his face just keeps going into darkness, into light, into yeah. darkness, into light. And it's at that point when I'm like, wow, you know, cinematography is incredible.
But, it's really powerful.
Yeah, it's really powerful because the words he's spouting are absolute drivel. And they are the ramblings of a madman. But the lighting, and this is what the character, you know, Captain, what's his name? Willard.
Captain, what's his name? You two,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
Get it together.
He's seeing, this is actually what he's seeing, the same thing. Like this guy coming in and out of light, this powerful presence that he's been curious
about. Well,
it's
also reflecting like the, and I think from Willard's perspective, it's reflecting the, I can understand this, you're a fucking madman, kind of switch that he's experiencing. That, you know, part of him agrees with a lot of what Kurtz is saying and part of him thinks, well, no, you're absolutely nuts. And I think I got to say, you know, I said that about Marlon Brando at the beginning of this, about, you know, all of the controversy around it. I think he fucking nailed Kurtz.
I think his
performance was stunning.
It's just screen presence, and you can't.
Yeah.
You just can't argue with it. And it's Marlon Brando, you know, from like On the Waterfront to The Godfather. Like, this is a man that can control the screen. He captures your imagination irregardless. Yeah. Like,
you look nowhere but at him.
And screen presence. And it doesn't matter what he looks like to me. He may have been an absolute nightmare, but he's turned up. He's done his 20 minutes of rambling. And yeah, but he's absolutely job done. And no one else could have done that and made it seem like he actually believed what he was saying, this like nonsense he's spouting. But the story about the arms as well that Len mentioned is when it's like the clarity hits and you're like, right, I get what you're saying. You've got like some evidence of what you're talking about, and it's horrific, but that's when the penny sort of drops, I think.
Mm. I think some of the best scenes in this film are the unscripted stuff. So one of my favourite scenes is right at the beginning when you first meet Willard and he's going mental in his room. And so I didn't know this when I watched it, but then having done some research prepping for this, he was off his face doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And he just said, just run the film.
Oh, really?
He was absolutely pissed up. At the time, Martin Sheen sadly had...
Who hasn't done it, Emma? Like, you know, we can all admit that we've been in a hotel room pissed, naked, punching mirrors and shit. Oh, you know, we've all been there.
Yeah, totally. I do that every other week down at the Travelodge locally. They hate me there. But so Martin Sheen had a really serious drinking problem at the time. And, you know, a lot of the... I spent a long time reading about this morning. But he talked about how he felt like it would help him conquer his alcoholism. And so that whole thing is just him absolutely fucking battered. Him punching the mirror, totally improv. Just punch the mirror, which, yeah, and it was real. And that, for me, not knowing it when I watched it, it was an incredibly powerful thing to watch, because you see the damage and the kind of descent into madness that he's already on,
yeah,
having spent so much time in that environment. And then going back and you know, that just makes me even more appreciate the performance of Martin Sheen in this film. I think him and Brando... Oh, it doesn't sound right when you just say Brando, does it?
No.
Him and Marlon Brando...
Put some respect on his name.
Yeah.
Equally fantastic in this. And I think Martin Sheen's performance the whole way through fully captured me, my attention.
If he was on screen, I was watching without saying or doing anything, really.
Yeah.
It's those eyes. Yeah.
Incredibly
the blue-eyed
expressive.
Boy in the middle of the jungle. And yeah.
We can't leave the scene section without talking about Ride of the Valkyries, because it is the most iconic, probably, if you would say like top 10 most iconic film moments of all time, that would be in there.
Put on Sidewar up, make it loud. And the Romeo Fox, God, shall we dance?
Thank you.
Ride of the Valkyries, like you said, Lucy, how did they film that? The choppers filming in,
absolutely incredible,
going in unison onto this beach in Vietnam.
What makes it amazing is that you wouldn't get that now because it would all be CGI.
Yeah.
The fantastic thing about it is that it is real, and that just unbelievable.
I mean, there was powerful. There was a part of me thinking, "Wow, what speakers do they have that are that loud?" Obviously, it's artistic license because there's no way they would be able to hear Ride of the Valkyries, but. It's a very powerful. It's a powerful effect, like when you have them in the choppers, and then you have this school in North Vietnam, and you just hear "Ride of the Valkyries" in the background, coming up louder and louder, and then these explosions start happening and chaos ensues. It's an incredibly powerful scene, and obviously, like we've talked about. The crazy commander in there who's like, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning," obviously one of the most famous quotes in cinema history. And he's, I forgot completely in this film how obsessed he is with surfing.
How weird is that?
It is absolutely,
that's so weird,
bizarre. It is so
seeing
Lance,
them surfing while bombs are dropping, you're just like, this is the madness has started, like the madness is already here before we even got up the river.
It's,
but I think that's part of the power of the film is that, you know, Len, you were saying about, well, I think both of you have said it, but about how, you know, there were parts of Vietnam during the war where it was just barely any action, a lot of kind of party kind of shit, and then other areas that were horrific. You see that even in this journey, you know, you get that really quick switch between they're all pissing about surfing and then all of a sudden everything's like on fire. And it is... I suppose that madness is everywhere. It pervades every scene of this film. There is no one scene where you don't see someone or something that says everyone's losing it a bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it really engaging, because you're always on the edge of your seat. I'll give a notable mention, not necessarily a performance, but to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Mm.
The music behind this film is so good. So good. Just every single piece of it, fantastic. I mean, at one point, there's Susie Q comes on and you're like, brilliant, great. We've got a bit of The Doors.
Got to have The Doors in Vietnam. Prerequisite.
The Doors in Vietnam.
But like I was talking about, it's the synth stuff that really makes it distorted. Like, it's just completely bizarre. There's a lot of, like, horror strings in there as well at times.
Well, you mentioned Kubrick, and I get what you mean by
crescendos
that.
Of Kubrick style, you know, talking about films like The Shining, of high strings that create this, and pizzicato strings and synth that make it feel horrific and completely disjointed and sort of futuristic, dystopian. Like, it's got that feel to it. And I think as much as the sort of classic 70s tracks that are in there and late 60s tracks, it's the actual general soundtrack for me that with the images of these red and purple and yellow flares and just crazy imagery that really sort of sell it to like this next level where I'm just like, Jesus, this is bizarre. Like, to, you know, my brain doesn't know what's going on.
The atmosphere that's created by the soundtrack, the sound effects, and the cinematography and the visual effects all combines to really immerse you in the feeling of the film. And that is fantastic.
I reckon seeing this in the cinema would have been mind-blowing. Like, at the time.
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine that?
Like,
that would have been amazing.
There's some films that you just, like, throughout history where you're like, that would have blown people's minds. Films like science fiction films like Alien, even like Blade Runner that we talked about. Aliens, seeing something like this for a wartime like epic, you would just be like, you feel like you're there in 1979. You know, that's insane.
Especially it would have been incredible. So close to the end of the war as well, really.
Exactly.
Like you said, Len, to go on, when did it end? 74? 75?
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, I think it's
if it ever ended.
But, yeah, exactly.
Not for the people that went there. But yeah, just to then go and make this film. I think it was filmed in the Philippines, wasn't it? But
brave.
Yeah. Crazy to look back on now.
Well, Does anybody have any other scenes or notable performances they'd like to shout out before we move on to the quiz to prove, not that I think we need to, that Lucy has watched this
film? I have watched it. I think we were saying, like, Robert Duvall, that is a really sort of iconic performance just of, like, American jingoism and just, yeah, we're in the middle of the war, but I want to surf. And that's my priority now, is surfing. So that's a very, we have mentioned it, but yeah, just to double down on that manic performance.
Yeah, I think, you know, as much as there is ramblings of absolute madness, which I guess was in the script, but also, you know, improv from Brando, which we've now agreed we cannot say just Brando, so Marlon Brando. Just for those ramblings.
Doesn't sound right, does it?
No, just for those ramblings alone, he is so, I found him very imposing. I found him to be very, I don't know, just like you said, Lucy, his screen presence is, you can't buy that. You can't teach that. That is just, no, that is there.
That's there.
And obviously Martin Sheen does a fantastic job without saying much in this film. The voiceover is very good. Just the script.
Do you want an interesting tidbit about the voiceover?
Go on.
So at one point when Martin Sheen had his heart attack and wasn't able to
Someone else did it.
Do you know who it was?
I do know this, and I cannot
his
remember.
His son, Charlie.
No, it was his bro, Joe Estevez.
Ah.
Who did pretty much half of the voiceover work, but also body doubled for him when he wasn't able to be there because of his heart attack, which I think is brilliant. Like, that, again, brilliant. The stuff around this film is fascinating. So yeah. There you go. Honourable mention for Joe Estevez.
And honestly, like, I know there's, we'll just quickly breeze through this, but Chef, great, absolutely insane character. You know, when his head
really
gets...
feel for him though. I'm like, yeah, this is how you should be reacting to what's happening. That's realistic. Yep.
Yeah, when his head gets cut off, and you know, there's a part of me going, when
I cried.
Like, Kurtz is like, do you think I'm insane or something? He says something like that, and I was thinking in my head, well, the moment I saw the chopped heads on, like, just the floor everywhere, yes, you're totally fucking bananas.
But I also love Lance and how he's just like, well, I get to take my clothes off and put paint on myself. Yep, I'm here. I'm like,
great,
fully up.
Where's
for
that
it.
Acid?
He's just like, yeah, I'll just fit in, like, quite simple minded and just like, yep, all right, sacrifice the water buffalo. Yeah, I'm up for it.
That was
right
real.
In. Yeah, I mean,
it was just disturbing.
It looked real.
It looked
one
real.
Last notable scene. It disturbed me, I don't know if it's in the Redux or the version that you guys watched, but there is a tiny little bit where Lance has dropped the last of his acid, and he's got a purple flare, and he's just like standing on the edge of the boat,
on the
boat. I mean, purple haze, fucking brilliant.
It is amazing. Visually, like I said, the flares are incredible. They add such a vibrancy to the terrifying landscape,
to the green,
that it's just an ingenious, you know, they did use flares obviously for airstrikes, for, you know, people collecting injured soldiers, and to use the flares that they did here recreationally on the boat, and, you know, the colors
dumb
were
idea
in, the colors were insane, and you know, yeah, cinematography once again best I've seen in an old style, you know, an old style film for a very long time.
Well, thank you guys, but it is time for the quiz.
Right, I'm really scared because I haven't seen it. Like,
now, Lucy, you're going to be fine, mate. You're going to be totally fine.
Oh, don't make it easy. Come on,
there are six questions. Lucy has to answer at least three of them correctly.
Correct.
In order to prove that she has watched this film without. Having to watch it again, which I don't.
I wouldn't even
mind
watching.
Just
it
to clarify,
again, so.
She has to watch it again if she gets this wrong. No,
yeah,
Lucy, come
I don't
on,
mind. It's good.
It's a punishment. It's a punishment. So whatever.
It's not though. This is a good film. So. Okay.
You have to watch the
I
final
want to win,
cut.
Though.
Oh my
okay,
god!
No.
Yeah,
okay.
You've got to watch the 3 hours. Right, 17,
okay,
so.
Let's get this quiz then. Okay.
Here we go. So, question number one, okay. Lucy. On their journey through Vietnam, the team or the group stop at a large army base and meet some of the playmates, Playboy girls.
Yeah.
Can you tell me one of the months to which those playmates are assigned right, in that year.
That is hard. So, I don't know. I'm just going to pick a month. May.
Fuck me!
Yeah.
Is that right?
You're correct. August and May.
Yeah. I was going to say August.
How did you get that?
Well, there's 12 months, and I just thought it'll be a summary one.
So May, she's got a one in six chance, Emma.
Oh yeah,
one in six. Yeah.
For the summer. I was going to say August.
Roll the dice, people. Roll the dice.
See, I told you they weren't all going to be easy. Okay. Question number two. Chef has a unique culinary skill. What is it?
He's from like New Orleans, so I'm gonna say like gumbo or what else is it called?
Can I jump in, please? He's a.
I'm afraid you are incorrect, Lucy. Yeah. And Len, could you tell us what he is?
He's a saucier, which means he specializes.
Which means he specializes in sauces.
Well, a gumbo is kind of a sauce, so I feel like half point.
I think that's more of like a soup, isn't it, or like a. Kind
of, I thought that was an easy like one, Lucy, to be honest.
I haven't seen it for like a month, so no, I don't remember that he was a saucier. And I haven't got any memory.
Okay, number three. What book by Joseph Conrad is a film said to be somewhat based on?
Heart of Darkness.
Correct.
That's too easy.
Question number four.
Jesus,
yeah.
God,
but it was in there. It was in there, and I've used some of my other facts. Uh-huh. Question number four. What is the code to order the airstrike on Kurtz's camp?
No, I don't know. Operation... Surf. I don't know.
Oh my god.
No, it is not Operation Surf. It begins Len, would you like to take a guess?
Does it begin with an A?
Yes, it does.
Apocalypse.
Damn it. No.
No.
That would be good if it was Apocalypse Now.
It would. It is Almighty.
Almighty, that's it. That's it. Yeah, I knew it was an A.
Didn't remember that.
Yeah.
Two questions left, 1 point required, Lucy.
Jesus, struggle street.
No, two. Yeah, no, I have got two. Got... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one out of two.
Okay. Question number five. What are Kurtz's last words that we hear repeated?
God.
The horror. The horror.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, phew.
And question number six. Lance is well known for what sport?
Oh, surfing. Fuck off. Just hand it to her.
I saved an easy one for the end. I didn't think she'd get the playmate months, to be fair.
Yeah.
Well done, Lucy.
Thank you.
No, you're not a shambles, Lucy. Emma's a shambles.
4 out of 6.
It's not a shambles.
It's a shambles that you didn't get sauces, to be honest. But you managed to guess May. So congratulations. Skills.
Thank you.
Would anyone like my bonus questions?
Yeah, nah, we're all right. See if I can do any better with that.
I'll give you one bonus question.
Okay.
On the journey towards Cambodia, the team stopped to raid a Vietnamese boat for food and supplies. What surprise do they find once they've
puppy.
Shot everyone?
Puppy.
Yeah.
And the puppy doesn't, well, we don't see it die, so.
No, I'm dies off camera.
It's still alive.
Yeah, it's alive.
That's wishful thinking. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Lucy, well done for passing
the
quiz. It's impressive. Tough. And actually, it's been a thoroughly enjoyable hour talking about, I was about to say the Heart of Darkness then. No, Apocalypse Now. Really, really thoroughly enjoyed. So I suppose all that remains is to reveal slash see if we can find another Hathafisna.
Yeah. What's this one you haven't
now
seen?
Now, I have one.
Go on.
So I'm on the Rotten Tomatoes website for Apocalypse
Good
Now.
Good website.
Scroll down. You might also like... I've never seen LA Confidential.
What?
That is bizarre.
I love that film. That's like one of my favourite films.
We'll happily do that. That's a great film.
I don't know...
Oh, man.
How?
What a classy film.
Yeah, we'll do that. So, we'll do that. LA Confidential.
I think we might have to do that next
month. That's
a
good throwback as well. Like that'll take me back. That's got some memories.
Well, was it 97? 99%. Fresh.
It's so good. I watched it, you know, when we were doing on Twitter, like, recommend a film. I actually watched it in lockdown, like, last year, because it's just fantastic.
Lockdown life.
I was looking at the cast, I was like, Guy Pearce, lovely. Kim Basinger, great. Russell Crowe, Danny DeVito.
Kevin Spacey, but, you know, it's still
I wasn't going to mention Spacey.
He's very good in it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that, actually. So there you go. How the fuck have we not seen
I'm
that?
I'm excited, because I love it.
Okay, guys, tune in for that. Also, just to say, that we have completely rebranded Fan Critical in a way. Not really in a way, but in a way. So now we release an episode once per week. If you do want to catch up on previous content, we release a monthly schedule. This month already, we have had our new show, Not All Sequels Are Created Equal, where two of our members pitch sequels to films that never had one, and we choose the winner. We've also had 60 Minutes to Midnight, the show where John, myself, and Gareth just discuss what we've been watching and general life stuff. You know, that is a bit more chilled vibe, unscripted in a way. Not that this is scripted, because it's definitely not.
Definitely not.
Emma and Lucy have their own show coming up later this month too, so do check that out. Yep. And
checking next week for something for old that. And something new.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the name. We've got a name.
Something old and something new. You've heard it here first. So, yes, please do check those shows out. Please do subscribe. Please do go to patreon.com/fancritical and sponsor us with any dollary dues, dollars, bucks. That would be amazing. Thanks.
Shout
to,
out this week to Richard Carroll.
Of our course, our boy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for the support, bro. Massively appreciate that. Know you're a big fan of the content. Know you listen to the stuff. So thank you so much for the donation. It will not go to waste. I promise you that. It will not all go towards John's beer fund. Don't worry. What I will say is the money that people have donated has enabled us to create this new schedule, come up with new show ideas, and try and give you guys content in a time when content is kind of light in a way, just because of COVID and stuff like that. I know we're coming out at the end of it now, hopefully, touch wood, fingers crossed. But the donations have enabled us to do all of those things. So thank you so much. And as I said, if you do want to sponsor us and you do enjoy the content, you do enjoy the discussion, patreon.com/fancritical.
And all that remains to say is thank you to both Lucy and Len, and of course myself, Emma,
Thanks, Emma,
joining me to talk about Apocalypse Now. And yeah, tune into all that content.
Content.
And we'll see you soon. Bye.
See you soon, guys.
Bye.
Dora.
Hey, what a shot.
Outstanding, Red Team. Outstanding. Get your case of beer for that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.